morning, everybody. Well, hopefully I don't let you down. I sound better than I really am. But anyway, so like you said, I'm Keith Snell. I run B2E Data Marketing. Our office is in the East Village. Started the business 15 years ago, so I've been doing this quite a while. We deal with companies such as American Enterprise, Delta Dental, Bankers Trust, Guide One Insurance. The medium-sized companies, we do small companies, as well as like Lennox Heating and Air Conditioning out of Dallas, Service Experts out of Dallas. But today I'm going to talk just a little bit about data-driven marketing, since that's kind of what I do. Everybody hears about data analytics. Data analytics has been around about, 35 years, probably, maybe even a little bit longer. Because of the current press, it's in the news all the time right now. So we hear about it quite a bit. So the benefits of data-driven marketing. So why this is interesting to me, so I'm a computer science guy that I actually got into marketing. But the reason you want to use data is to make it more efficient for media buying, targeting your right consumers, and messaging your audience with relevant messages. So I'm going to go through, I'm not going to go too deep into this, but
no, you can't.
All right, sorry about that. So I'd like to talk a little bit about maybe our process, just because data analytics is kind of a, it's two words, it's kind of a big industry, but for us, we go through a process with our clients, and it's, first of all, gathering data is step one. We can get data from your customer database, third-party databases, weather data, we can get data pretty much from any place, anywhere. Step two is we organize it, put it into a format that makes sense and it makes it usable. Step three is data knowledge. In our office, we use a product called Tableau, which is a visualization product. So we'll visualize the data, and I'll show you some examples of that. Step four, prioritizing the data. So once you visualize the data and understand it, you got to prioritize your goals and what you want to get out of it. Step five is taking action, putting your data to work. How are you going to use it? And then step six, improving your data every single month. So data day for us, one of our data sources we get from our customers. So if we have a client, they generally, all they know about their customers is their name and address and maybe what product they buy. So, the date they purchase something, what they purchase, how much they spent, and their name and address. And they don't really know anything else about them. So it's hard to grow a business if you don't really know what your customers look like. So to do that, we append third-party data. So there's many companies out there that sell data. So we use one of our sources is Experian. So everybody's heard of Experian as the credit bureau, but it also has a sister company that does LISC compilation. So Experian gets their data from thousands of sources. So as I go through some of these sources, just know I can get about 2,500 data elements on every single person in this room. And, a little scary, but here's just some examples. Gender, age, education, marital status. Do you own your home? Like Polk County Assessor's Office, I can get about 300 data elements from the Polk County Assessor. How much you bought your house, what kind of roof you have, what kind of siding do you have, what the interest rate was on the loan when you closed. And things like that are pretty valuable when you're out there trying to market.
I was curious what you mean by person type.
Person type would be, in that situation, would be aged person in the home or a minor or head of household. They keep it pretty generic. Dun & Bradstreet is one of the databases we have. We actually, in-house in our office, we actually have the Experian database and the Dun & Bradstreet database. So when a client sends us a file of their customers, we can do all the work in our East Village office and your data never leaves. But when it comes to Dun & Bradstreet, understanding how many employees the business has, what year they started, even their Fortune 1000 ranking, et cetera. Weather's really a big deal, and I think a lot of people don't think about how does weather relate to your sales. So we've actually built our own weather database in-house, so we have every single zip code in the United States by day for the last 10 years. So we can take your sales file and overload on what was the weather on the day you had sales, or a call center file, is weather driving calls, etc. Geospatial, another thing that I think people don't realize, TomTom, has anybody ever heard of TomTom? It's been around for a long time, but they actually have a database that we have as well. And what we like to do is compare, you know, a store to the customers and look at the drive time of what it takes. So like this is an example of a 60-mile radius around Atlanta, Georgia, and the red star happens to be a store that we do business with. But 60-mile radius is pretty meaningless versus a 37-minute drive time. So 37-minute drive time in Des Moines, Iowa is a lot different than 37 minutes in Atlanta. And understanding where your customers are coming from based on their drive time is pretty important. Okay, there's a lot of data models out there as well. And one we use is called mosaic marketing segmentation. So everybody in the United States falls into one of 72 clusters. And this happens to be G24, status-seeking singles. So if I know what cluster, and it's this three-digit code, if I know what cluster you fall in, I know your demographics, your age, your income, do you own a home? I know your psychographics, do you hunt, do you fish, do you bowl, etc. I know your media preferences. Do you prefer direct mail versus radio versus your digital ads on your cell phone? And then your digital behavior. What do you do online when you're online? And what websites do you go to? Another data model is True Touch, and this starts getting into your predictive motivators. Like this particular example up here is, it's two women. Demographically, they're exactly the same. They're both female, 32, they live in Chicago, they're college educated, and they're single. But the lady on the left is, her predictive motivator is look at me now, and she believes in premium brands, and she's a country club member and enjoys entertainment, where the lady on the left is more environmentalist, stop and smell the roses. So if you use just demographics to target your customers, you're gonna fall short. But when you start getting into, you know, their feelings and their psychographics, you're gonna truly understand what the person looks like and how they're feeling. And in marketing, it's all about what resonates with you. So, you know, I always use the example of if you're Iowa or Iowa State fans. So if you get a credit card offer from Iowa State and you're a Hawkeye fan, you're probably not too pleased with it and you're going to throw it away. But if you get a Hawkeye credit card offer and you're a Hawkeye fan, it resonates with you. And your odds of maybe signing up go way up. And this is kind of the same thing, is using data that resonates. Green Aware. This is a great data element we actually use quite a bit, is trying to understand how green a person is, how environmental they are, like behavior greens. 29% of the population lives green, thinks green, recycles everything. On the far end of it, it's the true browns. They're the ones that don't care about the environment. They're throwing their McDonald's bag out the window going down the interstate.
What's the percentage of that?
True Brown, 16%. And it, you know, last year on Earth Day, I actually saw somebody throw a McDonald's bag out the window, and I couldn't even believe it. But, you know, if you're selling Priuses, you know, go after the behavior greens. We do a lot of work for Lennox Heating and Air Conditioning. If you're selling the high efficient furnaces, you're going to go after the behavior green. And we've done some modeling and proven that, like, 90% of the people that buy their furnaces that are 99% efficient are behavior greens. And again, that saves you a lot of money when it comes to marketing, because now you're not guessing who to go after. I always like to say is, if you're looking at the Des Moines marketers, 350,000, 400,000 people live in Des Moines, you can't afford to market to everybody. But once you do some slicing and dicing, and you can get down to the 5,000 people that have a high propensity to buy your product, you can actually market to 5,000 and actually afford that. Visual business intelligence. Again, this is just an example of Tableau. We take data. A lot of you are probably used to looking at reports in Excel over the years or PDF reports. We actually put them visually into a Tableau. When we set them up, you could actually understand what the data says within 5 seconds. And if you can't, we failed. So that's the good thing. And it's all interactive. It's web-based. You can make decisions quickly. Like here's in a drive time example where I show a pop-out. And I know it's a little bit hard to read up there, but on the top right-hand chart, you know, 0 to 12 minute drive. And so I can overlay your sales on top of the distance it takes you to drive. You know, 11 to 20 minutes, you know, $4 million in sales. And then a map below. Visually, you know, the darker the shading, the more customers you have. The lighter the shading, the less customers you have. Return on marketing investment. One thing we do, because marketing is a huge expense, people spend a lot of money. So what we do is every time we do a direct mail or email campaign, after usually 50, 60 days, we'll do a match back to our mail file, to our customer file, and we'll tell you where those customers came from, what mail piece did they get, or what email did they get, or did they get targeted via IP targeting on their internet. So we'll tell you exactly how much money you made and how much did you spend to make that money. And then lifetime value. I think a lot of people, they think about their customers and, you know, it cost me $200 to get a new customer. And I think they fall short where they don't realize that after 12 months, they made $2,000 off that same person, or 5 years, they made $10,000 off that same person. So trying to think farther out down the line is how much money, what's the lifetime value of that customer because they like you and they keep coming back. Market penetration. It's good to know where your customers come from. So, you know, the map, blue map in the middle is, you know, my customers, and the green map on the left is my prospects. So if you know where your customers are and where they're traveling from, you can also look at where your prospects are and understand what your penetration, your market penetration is, where your opportunity is. So we'll be able to say, okay, you have 50 customers in a zip code, 50309, but there's 5,000 prospects or opportunities for you to go after. And again, weather, we use weather quite a bit. So good old data analytics, we'll use an example here on the right where the top graph is daily sales. So every day I can track the sales for a particular customer, and then the middle graph is the feels like high temperature of the day, and the blue line is the feels like low temperature of the day. And this is a great example where you can see where it went from 70 degrees to 47 degrees the next day, and sales blew up. So this is a particular client where you can see where sales does matter to weather. And, you know, understanding historically what happens is really important, but what can you do with it? So what we do is we look at the 8-day forecast. And if we start seeing huge weather shifts, we can send out an email, for example, to our customer base and say, on Friday, it's going to be 40 degrees. Is your furnace ready? Because you're going to get cold. So you can be proactive, and then the days where sales are low, you can drive revenue back to those slow days. Omnichannel marketing. It's one thing, you know, I think everybody's so used to direct mail and probably email. But in our world, we live in an omnichannel world. It's trying to reach the customer where they're located. So we can actually tell you exactly, you know, what's your preferred method of being communicated to. Like here's an example, broadcast TV, direct mail, email. So if I'm looking at 100,000 people, 82,000 of them love broadcast TV. You get down to email, only 12,900 like email. So odds are you're probably not going to do email to all 100,000 because they're not going to buy your product because of email. And that's it. I don't know how much time I got. If you want, I got something just for fun that I can pull up. And I don't know if you guys realize this is May 4th, right? So if anybody's Star Wars fans. So I have an example where I actually downloaded the National UFO database. So if you guys didn't know that actually existed, it really does. So I'll pull that up next. Since I got a few minutes, right? So there is just so much data out there available, and sometimes you don't realize what exactly is out available in the open market. So there's, you know, the stock market, ticker data, UFO data, weather data. You may or may not know, you know, what makes sense or what you can use. So I actually found a database that's out there by, I think, Project Blue Book or something, the government organization that created that. If you guys remember that back in the 70s or 80s maybe. So this is actually all the UFO sightings in the United States over the last, looks like since the 50s. So, but you can tell where, 2014 was a big UFO year. And what region of the company, what month. So if you see on the left where it's, you know, May, June, July, August, September, the summer months, a lot of UFO sightings. Because people are outside, right? So they see more lights. And then Phoenix, Arizona is I'm not sure what's going on down there, but it just makes it fun and interesting to look at. And I'll go through a few more examples. So if you look at, you can parse the data by, like, you know, what year, what decade, and you can tell 1980s, 1990s. What was the TV show that came out in the late 80s?
X-Files.
Wow. Did X-Files have any effect on UFO sightings? So it's not like we're having more UFO sightings. It's just people think they see them everywhere. But, and then the day of the week. Saturday night, a lot more, you know, people are home, probably having a few cocktails. I mean that's really kind of all I had, but it's just kind of interesting, and if you have any data out there that you want to see visually, you know, using Tableau is a great way to go. But it's so in honor of May 4th. Get to see a little UFOs. Questions?
Yeah. Thanks for your talk. I really enjoyed your presentation. I guess I was wondering if any of the data you've looked at has to do with occupation and kind of turnover at jobs and having employers find the right match for job openings they may have, if any of your clients might be kind of staffing firms or
sure.
companies.
The question was, can I find occupations, essentially, and do I use occupations? It's easy, but yet it's hard. So in certain professions, occupation, like if you're a licensed professional, like a doctor, a lawyer, a dentist, that data is everywhere, very easy to get. And so I do work for Mercer out in West Des Moines, and they offer insurance, liability insurance to registered nurses and doctors. So we can pull those lists of licensed professionals very easy. But the reality is when there's so many lists on the market, there's about 35 to 45,000 niche lists available on the open marketplace. So like one of our clients, Percival Scientific out in Perry, they go after entomologists, bug scientists. Well, there's actually three magazines on the market that targets entomologists, Entomology Today. So I can buy their subscription list and target entomologists to buy Personal Scientific's $30,000 refrigerators. So, but you can. There's ways.
So a question. So, you know, the internet's changed, and how does it, you know, like when you go do an online search for, let's say, hotel XYZ in this day and age, a week or two later, you'll be getting, you get pop-up ads.
Retargeting.
How does that work in terms of you have a client with these criterias and lists, and you figure out how to market to that? How does, did you do two of those tie in somehow?
Sure, and I think you're talking about like website retargeting where you
have right. You look for a particular hotel, let's say for example, and then week later, all of a sudden, there's an ad for that hotel how does that correlate with?
I'll take it in two steps. So that's called website retargeting, where you happen to click on their website and you're researching shoes or a shirt or a hotel, and then they drop a cookie onto your computer or your phone, and then later on their ads start following you all over. And that's pretty easy to do. You know, I do that for my business. It's pretty inexpensive. You know, my budget's $10 a day to do website retargeting for people. I think in the last 3 months, I've spent like $8. So it's something, if you own a business, everybody should be doing it because it's pretty inexpensive. Now, trying to find the right person, for an example, like we do in our office, it's called IP targeting. So I can match your physical home address to the IP number of the modem in your house that when you go home at night and you connect your Wi-Fi to. So if I can get a really targeted list, like an entomologist that's between 35 and 45 years old, and I have their home address, I can actually take those 5,000 prospects and match it to the IP number of their house. So then when they connect with their phone or their desktop, I can start pushing ads to them as they surf their normal websites, CNN, ESPN, you know, whatever sites they go to. So literally you can do really surgically targeted display ads on the internet. Does that answer your question? Any other questions?
I had a question on the Dun & Bradstreet slide you have there. You was talking about, you know, number of employees, ad business, something like that. Has a lot of businesses have cut back on contract employees, 1099s. Is that showing up? Is that affecting the data reports at all?
The question is, how good is the Dun & Bradstreet data? I find most business databases are mediocre at best, including Dun & Bradstreet, InfoUSA. You know, they have number of employees, and what they do is they'll call, like, I'll get that call, all right, how many employees do you have at your location? 7. They don't ever clarify if they're full-time, part-time, contract. So I would always use that data with a grain of salt. So if you're targeting, you know, Staples office supply store, you're going to know that 80% of their employees are part-time. But if you're targeting IBM, you're going to probably know they're full-time. So,
as I understand it, Facebook has announced the intention to modify their programs to allow people to erase their history. Is it fair to assume from what you have presented to us that the ability to erase your Facebook history won't make a dent in your access to data?
The question is, does Facebook and what I do have anything to do with each other? Not really, because the data is out there that I use is all offline data. Facebook supposed to keep their data pretty enclosed and in-house. You know, the whole Cambridge Analytica, they found a way to kind of sneak the data out. One thing, like we do, for instance, like we can still do Facebook ads, so I can take very targeted lists of those entomologists again, upload it to Facebook, do the match, and then start targeting them as well. But I don't ever get access to the data that Facebook's collected, you know, your likes and things like that. I just don't get access to that.
Follow-up question. In the news, we've seen a lot about Cambridge Analytica. And I'm curious to know, is what you have been describing here what Cambridge Analytics was doing in conjunction with our last presidential election?
The question is, do we do what Cambridge does? Yes, everything but stealing the data. So with the modeling, predictive modeling, using data that's available, everybody's been doing this for 30 years. So it's they haven't done anything special. They just happen to circumvent Facebook's platform to get all the personal data on people. So that's the only difference. They did it technically legally.
So we talked about pushing info via the IP address into people's homes, right? So who is controlling the access? Let's say I have MediaCom at home. Do you have to contact MediaCom to get those ads into through my IP address, or how does it work?
Okay, the question is, how in the heck are these people getting my IP number?
And how do they
get ads to you? Well, your IP number is out there. So there's companies like Experian that compiles data. Well, there's actually companies out there that compile IP numbers. So when you go to a website, for instance, first thing that gets dropped in the web log is your IP number, because it's all out there. It's all public. So what they're doing, the companies that compile IP numbers, is they find all the sources that have IP number, they match to sources that have IP and demographic data, or your name, and then they'll compile a database with all this information. So they're not really getting it from MediaCom or anything. Your IP number travels with you whenever you're surfing the internet and whenever you go to websites. So it's publicly available. And I'll give you another kind of creepy scenario on IP numbers. Like, here's an example. Anybody here go to a big conference, trade show, you know, whatever? So with IP marketing now, I can actually go and say June 5th, there's a trade show at the Bellagio in Las Vegas. So I can actually circle the Bellagio, because they all give you free internet when you get there, right? So those IP numbers are available. So I can actually, anybody that connects to the free IP or the free internet at the trade show conference, I can now target my ads to them. And the great thing about that is, once you connect to the internet, the Wi-Fi, I can also grab your cell phone ID number, so then when you go back home, I can start pushing ads to you when you go back home as well. So that's kind of how that works. So you go to a big dentist conference in Las Vegas, and you go home and you're a dentist in Waukee, you can start getting my ads to you by x-ray machines, etc. So we live in a pretty connected world. Yes?
Seems to me that sometimes marketing is convincing people to buy things that they don't really need. My question is, do you ever have any ethical or moral qualms about the data that you provide to marketing people?
So the question is, do I have any ethical qualms? I do sometimes. And usually when that situation comes up, because when you're in data and data analytics, you have to be very ethical. So like lawyers have a code of ethics, actually when you're in direct marketing, data marketing, we also have a code of ethics that we have to abide by. So like, for instance, like Experian won't let me rent any data of anybody older than 65, younger than 18, unless they see the mail piece. So they're going to control the message that's going out. So if somebody wanted to do something a little seedy, we're out. Most list companies that we deal with, like Experian and Equifax, for instance, have come to my office and done a site visit to make sure that we're a legitimate company and, you know, we're on the up and up. You have a question?
Any government oversight in your industry at all?
Question is there any government oversight? Some, but for the most part, it's self-regulated for now. But that being said, we do a ton of business, a ton of analytics in Canada, which is huge government oversight. And I can't get demographics at the individual level in Canada, where in the U.S. I can. Canada, the demographics is at the postal code level. The beauty of that is there's only 15 homes in a postal code, so they aggregate. So birds of a feather flock together, right?
So have you had any data breaches then on this data? Because you've got evidently people's personal data here, And so it's just like the credit companies. They have, out on the dark web, your information. So what are you doing to protect the people that you've got in your database? Anything?
Sure. Absolutely. Question is, what do we do to protect our data? So, for instance, first thing we do, we don't collect anything, no social security numbers, no birth dates, no PINs. We don't do any of that. But for a data analytics company, we have high security in our office. So when you come in our office, we have security audit every 90 days. We have a security company come in. They put a little box on our server, and they try to hack into it from the outside. When you send us a data file, the first thing we do is we encrypt it. As soon as it hits our server, it's encrypted to the point where, like for Delta Dental, for instance, only the employees that work on Delta Dental can unlock the files for Delta Dental. But once they're on our server, they're locked at rest. So our server is essentially a doorstop if somebody came in and stole it, or they hacked in from the outside. But I'll say we're probably 99% more secure than most every company in the United States. And plus, we're small, so we're under 10 people. So we have a lot less risk versus a big company that has thousands of computers sitting on their desk, and they forget to update the antivirus software on one computer, where we're updating ours every 90 days, making sure all our patches are in place on the server and such. So prudent companies do the data security. And we also have cyber liability insurance as well, just in case. And we have to.
How does the name of the company come to be?
B2E. The question is, how the heck do we come up with B2E? So what I always tell people is, you know, we live in a B2C, business to consumer, and a B2B world, business to business. But we do both, so we're kind of in a B2E, or business to everyone world. So that's where B2E came from. Jonathan.
Every day in my office, I get scam attempts, fraud attempts, every single day. And I've reported it to Wells Fargo, and they don't pursue that kind of thing unless they actually have a loss. I'm curious to know if these IP addresses are out there, could the Attorney General or Wells Fargo hire someone like you to track down who's actually doing this and do something about it?
The question is, how can we find these bad people? So they wouldn't hire me, they'd probably hire the FBI, but they can definitely do it because, you know, the whole IP number, like I'm appalled at Facebook and you get ads that, you know, the fake news ads. Well, they know it's coming from a Russian server farm by their IP number. Why in the heck can't they shut that down? It just, to me, it's illogical and makes no sense. But if somebody had the time and resources, yeah, they could definitely track them down.
Could you talk a little bit about your services for nonprofits?
Sure. The question is, what do we do for nonprofits? So I think we talked a little bit early on about we have a big data for nonprofit program. So every single month, we have one nonprofit usually signs up, and we do all their analytics for free. Basically, we clean their data because all nonprofits pretty much have crappy data. So we clean it up, address standardize, and we tell them which addresses are mailable, which ones are not, how many deceased people are on their list so they can get the deceased people out. We append demographics, you know, age, income, gender, how much money they have. And we do a profile. We'll tell them what their donors look like, what their volunteers look like. Once we get a good profile of what their donors look like, we can actually say, okay, your prospect marketplace is the Des Moines Metro or Boone or, you know, Iowa City, and we can tell you how many prospects exist in those communities that match your best donors. So kind of in a nutshell, that's what we do. Yes.
Yes, tying into that, would you possibly have an interest or be able to download all of the reports from all of the candidates on their donors and then develop that profile to then sell back to political campaigns?
Absolutely. We do a little bit of that right now. So, you know, because like we have the voter database in the Secretary of State's office.
Sure.
So we've appended all the demographic data, the psychographic data. We've actually downloaded, you know, like the state of Iowa has all the donor data for the money people have donated to each campaign. So we have that. We've matched that back to the voter database as well. So we definitely can create profiles.
We do have a token of appreciation. It's a recording of the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus that I'll have for you as an appreciation for your being here today. I think we've learned today that there is a very fine line between something very interesting and something absolutely scary as hell. A few months ago, Ann Seltzer was here and gave us a presentation on her polling and the science behind that and how that is used. And I've come to believe that the difference between Ann Seltzer and you is the difference between an actuary and an Italian actuary. An actuary can tell you generally when you're likely to die. An Italian actuary can tell you the day you're going to die. Outstanding presentation. Thank you very much. Okay. I did not know when I invited Keith to come and speak that it was going to be quite as timely as it has turned out to be, but our attendance went up when it was announced that he was going to be here against the backdrop of Cambridge Analytics and what had happened in the last election. Before I tell you a little bit about who's coming as next speakers, I want to call attention to someone who is here today who is very special, and that is Cliff Paulson, who is seated back here, glasses and the grayer hair. Cliff has been a long time participant in First Friday Breakfast Club. He subscribes now to our newsletter. It's a little more difficult to get out to our meetings at this hour, but he has been a tremendous contributor to our scholarship program for years and years and years. And we appreciate that, and we appreciate your being here, Cliff. Thank you very much. And thanks, Mike Perry, for getting him here this morning. That's terrific. Okay, we've got a real great lineup for you coming up. On June the 1st, we're going to have our scholarship recipients and their families here, so that is going to be a highlight meeting of the year. We have 8 scholarship recipients, and they are truly outstanding young people who have done courageous things to reduce homophobia and educate about LGBTQ issues across the state. You're going to find them fascinating. You're going to find that very reassuring and heartwarming. I will tell one anecdote. A number of years ago on that day, we had as our speaker Ambassador James Hormel, first openly gay ambassador of the United States ever appointed, and he was our guest speaker. And Fred Phelps was in town to protest our scholarship recipients and James Hormel. And so we were all gathered in here. There must have been at least this number plus our guests. It was all warm and cozy, and we were having a great time. And Fred was out there protesting with his people in the street, and there was a driving rain. So sometimes God speaks and smiles and targets. So our speaker in June is going to be Nate Monson, who is the executive director of Iowa Safe Schools. Also, it seems to me that their portfolio has expanded given the recent violence in some of our schools. So that we can look forward to hearing from him. July the 6th is former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack. August the 3rd is Des Moines School Board Chair Terry Caldwell Johnson. September the 7th is Brad Clark, who is the Executive Director of the Tim Gill Foundation. And he's going to be here for our speaker in September on the 7th. And then in October, we're going to have Sam Brenton, who is with the Trevor Project, and he is also involved in this 50 bills in 50 states to to outlaw gay conversion therapy. So those is the lineup through October. I hope to see you here every month between now and then. And thank you very much for being here this morning. Correct.
You might want to have people starting to think about the first Friday table at Pride and who might be interested in willing to staff it when the subject comes up.
Fine. Good. Any other quick announcements? Then we're adjourned. Thank you for being here today. Those of you who would like to speak with Deirdre this year are welcome to do that too.